Overcoming the importance of the market. Even when natural resources are properly managed, either through private ownership, permits, or community agreement, social choices might still lead to depletion rather than sustainable management. Consider the following illustration. A lake is filled with a rare fish species that has a market value as food. If the lake is owned as a public commons and is freely accessible for fishing, the result will be a rapid depletion of the fish population if the costs of fishing are low enough. Now suppose that the lake is privately owned or communally managed to maximize the economic value of the lake. Will the owner or community organization guard against depletion today in order to reap the benefits of selling fish in the future? Certainly the owner will calculate whether it is advantageous to catch more fish today and sell them now, or to catch fewer fish today in order to sell more in the future. Since money in the pocket today is worth more than the same amount in the future, because money today can be invested at the market interest rate and thereby grow over time, the decision will be to keep the fish in the lake only if the market value of the fish stock is expected to increase more rapidly than the rate of interest. If the price of the fish per ton is expected to remain unchanged, and if the fish is a slow-growing species, then the value of the fish in the lake will grow less rapidly than the rate of interest. The profit-maximizing owner will deplete the fish stock and perhaps drive a rare species to extinction, rather than wait to sell more fish in the future. Private or community ownership alone will not save the species. Two subtle issues are at work in this example. The first is that the market price of a species will generally not reflect the species' societal value as part of Earth's biodiversity. Market prices do not reflect the value that society puts on avoiding the extinction of other species, only the direct consumption value of those species for food, aphrodisiacs, pets, hunting trophies, or ornaments. Second, the rate of interest diminishes the incentive of the resource owner to harvest the resource at a sustainable rate. If the value of the resource is likely to grow more slowly than the market rate of interest, the blaring market signal is to deplete the resource now and pocket the money. Since the market rate of interest depends ultimately on the saving decisions and preferences of the current generation alone, without any voice of the future generations, the market rate of interest can give the signal to deplete the resource at the expense of future generations. When the current generation is impatient, that is, it places a high value on current consumption relative to future consumption, the market interest rate will tend to be high, and the market signal transmitted to each individual resource owner will be to deplete the resources under the owner's control. In essence, there is a tyranny of the present over the future. As expected from the theory, slower-growing animals and plants are especially endangered today. Consider as an example one major category, slow-growing megafish. Their slow growth makes them a poor investment, even in managed fisheries, and their large size makes them an easy prey. A new megafishes project has identified a number of species that are endangered: Chinese paddlefish, Mekong giant catfish, Tanganyika lates, and the pallid sturgeon, among others. Large land animals are in similarly desperate straits. Once again, public policy can intervene to align private interests with sustainable development, and specifically with the interests of later generations unrepresented in the market today. The overharvesting of a natural forest or a rare species can be banned by setting aside protected land or marine areas, and by banning hunting, fishing, or trading in particular species. Both methods are widely used, though imperfectly, and both still fall to the onslaught of illegal harvesting and free market ideologies. The Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, CITES, adopted in 1963, is the preeminent international trade treaty to protect endangered species by regulating and in some cases banning trade in endangered species. The treaty agrees on a hierarchy of endangered species. 1. Those that are threatened with extinction and therefore banned for trade except in exceptional circumstances. 2. Those that are endangered and therefore regulated. And 3. Those that are protected in at least one country, a country that asks for cooperation from the other signatories. There are now 172 members of the convention, and these members agree on the classification of species and the follow-up actions. toward a sustainable population. Controlling population growth on our planet is the second great challenge of sustainable development. However, there is also a tyranny of the present when it comes to population growth. Parents often have many children in order to ensure the parents' old age security, a decision that may well come at the expense of the children's own well-being. After all, an impoverished family cannot really provide for the nutritional, health, and educational needs of 6 or 7 children. Yet impoverished parents may have that many children for their own benefit, a subtle form of exploitation of future generations by today's generation. Similarly, in places where land ownership is communal and land is redistributed according to family size, each family might well overproduce children because they expect the community to transfer land to them as a result. If natural resources, such as trees for fuel wood, are held communally, this too can result in a choice of excessive family size. Each family will not take into account the social costs of added children on the sustainability of the commons. A household's decision on fertility also depends on widespread cultural norms, on the availability of contraception in public health facilities, on the educational opportunities and costs for children, and on many other matters that are determined by public policy. All of this is to say that the decentralized decision-making of individual households can easily lead to excessive population growth at rates that jeopardize the physical environment, the well-being of the children, and later generations. On the other hand, public policies designed to promote a voluntary reduction of fertility rates can have an enormous effect, benefiting both present and future generations.